But now we come to the why of the spiritual community, the why of the Sangha. Why do we have a Sangha at all? Especially, why do we have it in the more mundane sense? Why should there be a spiritual community at all? Now, it's quite easy to see, in a sense, why there should be a third dual. Why you should have, say, a community of people at different levels, the social, ecclesiastical, monastic, high spiritual, and so on. But it's not so easy to see why all these should constitute not just a third jewel, but also a third refuge. Now, what do we mean by this? We take refuge in the Buddha because the Buddha represents the spiritual ideal of enlightened humanity that we want to attain. We take refuge in the Dharma because that represents the path we want to follow. And both of these are necessary to the spiritual life. You must have an ideal, you must have a path to the realization of that ideal. This rather reminds me of something I heard many years ago from a very famous South Indian teacher called Swami Ram Das. He has many, I would say tens of thousands of followers in India. He died only a couple of years ago. And once he was asked the question, how is it that so many who take up the spiritual life don't make any real progress? Year after year, they seem to be just standing still. So he said, it's quite simple, two reasons. They don't make any spiritual progress because in the first place, they've no clearly defined ultimate objective towards which they want to work. And secondly, they've no clearly defined way of getting there. This is the reason. So far as Buddhism is concerned, our clearly defined ultimate goal to which we want to get is Buddhahood, represented by the Buddha. And our way of getting there is the Dharma, the teaching of the Buddha. Now these two are not only necessary, they appear to be sufficient. Why should one have to take refuge in a spiritual community, a Sangha? Why not just have two refuges, the Buddha and the Dharma? Why have the third? Why have the Sangha? How does going for refuge to a Sangha help us? How does going for refuge to a spiritual community, at whatsoever level, help us? Now, we mustn't be misled by words. This is what usually happens. We're usually very much misled by words. And usually, we're misled by words in the form of, especially, the abstract noun. I read not so long ago a very amusing statement which said that the whole of history of Buddhist philosophy could be described as a battle between Buddhism and the abstract noun. The abstract noun is perhaps our biggest enemy in Buddhism. So we mustn't forget that when we speak of a spiritual community, there's no such thing as a spiritual community existing up there in the air, detached, as it were, from persons, people. Communities, whether Buddhist or otherwise, consist of persons, consist of people. So membership of a community really means relationship with persons, people, within that community. In other words, a relationship between one individual and another. So we can put our question in another way. We can ask, how is it that entering into relationship with other people, with a common ideal, following a common path, help us in our spiritual life? That's really the question behind this question of, well, why have this third refuge, going for refuge to the Sangha or the spiritual community? We can really formulate it in this way. How does entering into relationship with other people who also take refuge in the Buddha and the Dharma help us in our spiritual life? Now, according to Buddhism, it does very definitely help. Shortly before he passed away, the Buddha spoke to the Vajis and he taught them various conditions of welfare. The Vajis were a tribe run about Vaishali, as some of you may know. So one of the points the Buddha stressed was that so long as the Vajis continue to meet regularly in full and frequent assemblies, so long they would prosper. And he went on to apply this to his Sangha, to his followers. He said, as long as you continue to meet together regularly, in full and frequent assemblies, conduct your business in harmony, and depart in harmony, so long you will prosper. Then again, there's another very important passage where the Buddha is talking with Ananda. Ananda said to the Buddha, he said, Lord, I think that half the holy life is what is called in Sanskrit and Pali Kalyana Mitrata. That means association with the right sort of people, to put it rather crudely. So, right sort of people in the spiritual sense, of course. So the Buddha said to Ananda, Ananda, don't talk like that. He said, association with the right sort of people, Kalyana Mitrata, is not half of the holy life, he said, it's the whole of it. Birds of a feather flock together. Tell me who your friends are and I'll tell you who you are. We know it quite well, this sort of principle in this country. But here we find it applied at the highest spiritual level. Association with the right sort of people, spiritually right sort of people, is, the Buddha says, with perhaps a touch of exaggeration, but not much, the whole of the holy life. Now, why is it regarded as so important? What's the reason? Obviously, there is an aspect of, say, learning from those who are more experienced than we are. And in the case of the monastic order, there is the question of gaining for oneself a more suitable environment for leading the spiritual life. But all of these are comparatively superficial. So why then is this association with the right sort of people, this joining a spiritual community, this taking refuge in the Sangha, why is it so important? Or why is this individual-to-individual contact so important? Now we can say that the answer would seem to lie in a quite simple psychological fact. And that is that we really know ourselves only in relationship with other people. If you're living alone on a desert island, even if you do have 100 discs with you, you'll never really know yourself, because yourself comes out in contact with, in relationship with other selves. So you can know yourself only in relationship with other people. And this is true spiritually also, in the case of spiritual relationships. Unless we know ourselves spiritually, of course there's no progress, because the knowledge is the progress, we can say. Now, we can verify all this quite easily from our own experience. We all know, we all have the experience, that sometimes our ideas are clarified by discussion. You get talking with someone, maybe someone asks you about Buddhism, and perhaps unwillingly at first, you're driven or cajoled into saying something about Buddhism, your understanding of it, with many apologies of course, and lots of hummings and hawings, but you say, well, this is what I understand about Buddhism. And sometimes it so happens that as you get talking, as you explain, and as especially the person you're talking to shows more and more interest, all sorts of things come out which you hadn't really realized were there within you. It's as though a new aspect of yourself emerged. And you know that aspect, therefore, only as a result of that contact with that other person who asks you the question about Buddhism. And sometimes you're rather surprised, perhaps rather pleased with yourself. You think, well, I've done rather well. I didn't realize I knew so much. Of course, sometimes the opposite thing happens. But let's assume that it does sometimes happen, we know from our experience, but we do feel, well, I hadn't realized I knew so much, or that I understood Buddhism so well. So it's as though the process of communication, or having to communicate with another person, activates an understanding already there. After all, we go on reading, listening to lectures, year after year, so something after all is being accumulated. We may not always be aware of it, but something is being deposited. Something is being, as it were, built up. So when it comes to a sort of crisis, when we're asked a question, Well, we've all that to draw upon, but it doesn't, as it were, become conscious. It doesn't become aware. It doesn't really become part of ourselves until we have to meet that challenge. So really, it's in this sort of contact with, communication with other people, that we get to know ourselves better. And unless we know ourselves, of course, obviously, there can't be, as I've said, any spiritual progress. Now, something of this sort happens in the spiritual life, in spiritual communication, not only with regard to this whole question of knowing, but also with regard to the question of being. You've got only to be with some people for certain aspects of yourself to be activated. You know this very well. I'm sure you've all had experiences of this sort. You're just with a certain person of a certain type, certain character, and what happens? The worst in you comes out. You hadn't realized before how bad you really were. You're really shocked, you're really startled. You think out about, to think I could have said that, or to think I could have done that. But what has happened? It was in you all the time, but it needed that person to activate it. That person's being, in proximity to yours, just touched that little raw spot. And then it happened. I remember someone told me, I'm not going to mention any names, only the other day, a very amusing and instructive little story of this sort. He said it all started with his wanting to go to the summer school. So this particular person is employed somewhere, and he told his employers, well, ahead of time, he said, 4 months' time, I want that week off. I'm going to the Buddhist summer school. So here's a person who's a very good, very sincere Buddhist, practices a lot of meditation. So what happened? The day before he was due to go on holiday, his employer asked him to do something. And obviously it was going to take much longer than one day. So he just reminded his employer that, well, tomorrow I go on holiday. So the employer apparently lost his temper and said, well, something about the summer school, quite uncomplimentary, and in general blew up. So this friend of mine said, well, he also blew up. All over the summer school, mind you, all learning about Buddhism, as he himself says to me. And before he realized what had happened, there was a ding-dong battle of words, almost of blows. But it was afterwards he realized. He said to himself, well, I never. I've been meditating all these years, studying Buddhism all these years. I want the holiday after all to go to the summer school to learn about Buddhism. And what's happened? That man got angry with me, and that once activated the anger in me. It was there all the time. I haven't overcome it. So he knew himself better. Now, this happens not only in this negative sort of way, it happens in a positive sort of way. There are some people, here again you all must know examples from your own experience, if you're with them, they need not say anything, they need not do anything, but you feel better. You may feel happier, you may feel lighter, may feel more cheerful, more optimistic, or just better when you're with them. They're activating by their presence something which is in you, but of which you're not usually aware. There are some people with whom you never misbehave. They're so nice, as it were, that you can't be anything else with them. They're so decent, you have to be decent with them. Their niceness, their decency, activates those very things in you. So we find this. And we find it not just in this ordinary social ethical sense, but also spiritually. If you're with people who are themselves deeply spiritual, or at least who are committed spiritually, something which is in you but not operative will be activated.